Note: The Shadows on the Wall is one of a set of short stories which can be found at Project Gutenberg in Stories of the Supernatural by Mary Wilkins Sots. XXXX, Wieland's Madness is an abridged version of Wieland, The Transformation, by Charles B. Brown, also available from Project Gutenberg, Wilms. XXXX, finally The Minister's Black Veil can also be read in From Twice Told Tales, by Nathaniel Hawthorne, 2 italics. XXXX. The Lock and Key Library, The Most Interesting Stories of All Nations, edited by Julian Hawthorne, American. Table of Contents, introduction by Julian Hawthorne, Riddle Stories, F. Marion Crawford, 1854, by The Waters of Paradise, Mary E. Wilkins Freeman, 1862, The Shadows on the Wall, Melville D. Post, 1871, The Corpus Delicti, Ambrose Bierce, 1842, An Heiress from Redorce, The Man and the Snake, Edgar Allan Poe, 1809-49, The Oblong Box, The Gold Bug, Washington Irving, 1783-1859, Wolfert Weber, or Golden Dreams, Adventure of the Black Fisherman, Charles Brockden Brown, 1771-1810, Wieland's Madness, Fitz James O'Brien, 1828-1862, The Golden Ingot, My Wife's Tempter, Nathaniel Hawthorne, 1804-1864, The Minister's Black Veil, Anonymous Horror, A True Tale, Riddle Stories, introduction by Julian Hawthorne. When Poe wrote his immortal Dupin Tales, the name Detective Stories had not been invented, the detective of fiction not having been as yet discovered. And the title is still something of a misnomer, for many narratives involving a puzzle of some sort, though belonging to the category which I wish to discuss, are handled by the writer without expert detective aid. Sometimes the puzzle solves itself through operation of circumstance. Sometimes somebody who professes no special detective skill happens upon the secret of its mystery. Once in a while some venturesome genius has the courage to leave his enigma unexplained. But ever since Gaboria created his Lecoq, the transcendent detective has been in favor, and Conan Doyle's famous gentleman analyst has given him a fresh lease of life, and reanimated the stage by reverting to the method of Poe. Sherlock Holmes is Dupin redivivus, and mutatus mutandis. Personally, he is a more stirring and engaging companion, but so far as kinship to probabilities, or even possibilities, is concerned, perhaps the older version of him is the more presentable. But in this age of marvels, we seem less difficult to suit in this respect than our forefathers were. The fact is, meanwhile, that, in the Riddle story, the detective was an afterthought, or, more accurately, a deus ex machina, to make the story go. The riddle had to be unriddled, and who could do it so naturally and readily as a detective? The detective, as Poe saw him, was a means to this end, and it was only afterwards that writers perceived his availability as a character. Lecoq accordingly becomes a figure in fiction, and Sherlock, while he was as yet a novelty, was nearly as attractive as the complications in which he involved himself. Riddle story writers in general, however, encounter the obvious embarrassment that their detective is obliged to lavish so much attention on the professional services which the exigencies of the tale demand of him, that he has very little leisure to expound his own personal equation, the rather since the attitude of peering into a millstone is not, of itself, conducive to elucidations of oneself. The professional endowment obscures all the others. We ordinarily find, therefore, our author dismissing the individuality of his detective with a few strong black chalk outlines, and devoting his main labor upon what he feels the reader will chiefly occupy his own ingenuity with, namely, the elaboration of the riddle itself. Reader and writer sit down to a game, as it were, with the odds, of course, altogether on the latter's side, apart from the fact that a writer sometimes permits himself a little cheating. It more often happens that the detective appears to be in the writer's pay and aids the deception by leading the reader off on false scents. Be that as it may, the professional sleuth is in 9 cases out of 10 a dummy by malice prepense. And it might be plausibly argued that, in the interests of pure art, that is what he ought to be. But genius always finds a way that is better than the rules, and I think it will be found that the very best riddle stories contrive to drive character and riddle side by side, and to make each somehow enhance the effect of the other. The intention of the above paragraph will be more precisely conveyed if I include under the name of detective not only the man from the central office, but also anybody whom the writer may, for ends of his own, consider better qualified for that function. The latter is a professional detective so far as the exigencies of the tale are concerned, and what becomes of him after that nobody need care. There is no longer anything to prevent his becoming, in his own right, the most fascinating of mankind. But in addition to the dummyship of the detective, or to the cases in which the mere slip of circumstance takes his place, there is another reason against narrowing our conception of the riddle story to the degree which the alternative appellation would imply. And that is, that it would exclude not a few of the most captivating riddle stories in existence. For in De Quincey's Venger, for example, the interest is not in the unraveling of the web, but in the weaving of it. The same remark applies to Bulwer's strange story. It is the strangeness that is the thing. There is, in short, an inalienable charm in the mere contemplation of mystery and the hazard of fortunes, and it would be a pity to shut them out from our consideration, only because there is no second-sighted conjurer on hand to turn them into plain matter of fact. Yet we must not be too liberal, and a ghost story can be brought into our charmed and charming circle only if we have made up our minds to believe in the ghosts. Otherwise their introduction would not be a square deal. It would not be fair, in other words, to propose a conundrum on a basis of ostensible materialism, and then, when no other key would fit, to palm off a disembodied spirit on us. Tell me beforehand that your scenario is to include both worlds, and I have no objection to make. I simply attune my mind to the more extensive scope. But I rebel at an unheralded ghostland, and declare frankly that your tale is incredible. And I must confess that I would as lief have ghosts kept out altogether. Their stories make a very good library in themselves, and have no need to tack themselves onto what is really another department of fiction. Nevertheless, when a ghost story is told with the consummate art of a Miss Wilkins, and of one or two others on our list, consistency in this regard ceases to be a jewel. Art proves irresistible. As for adventure stories, there is a fringe of them that comes under the riddle story head. But for the most part the riddle story begins after the adventures have finished. We are to contemplate a condition, not to watch the events that ultimate in it. Our detective, or anyone else, may of course meet with haps and mishaps on his way to the solution of his puzzle, but an astute writer will not color such incidents too vividly, lest he risk forfeiting our preoccupation with the problem that we came forth for to study. In a word, one thing at a time. The foregoing disquisition may seem uncalled for by such rigid moralists as have made up their minds not to regard detective or riddle stories as any part of respectable literature at all. With that sect, I announce at the outset that I am entirely out of sympathy. It is not needed to compare E. Goldbug with Paradise Lost. Nobody denies the superior literary stature of the latter, although, as the Oxford Senior Wrangler objected, what does it prove? But I appeal to Emerson, who, in his poem of The Mountain and the Squirrel, states the nub of the argument, with incomparable felicity, as follows. You will recall that the two protagonists had a difference, originating in the fact that the former called the latter Ittle Prig. Bun made a very sprightly retort, summing up to this effect. Let's differ. All is well and wisely put. If I cannot carry forests on my back, neither can you crack a nut. Andes and paradises lost are expedient, and perhaps necessary in their proper atmosphere and function. But squirrels and gold bugs are indispensable in our daily walk. There is as fine and as true literature in Poe's tales as in Milton's epics. Only the elevation and dimensions differ. But I would rather live in a world that possessed only literature of the Poe caliber than shiver in one echoing solely the strains of the Miltonian muse. Mere human beings are not constructed to stand all day a tiptoe on the misty mountaintops. They like to walk the streets most of the time and sit in easy chairs. And writings that picture the human mind and nature, in true colors and in artistic proportions, are literature, and nobody has any business to poo-poo them. In fact, I feel as if I were knocking down a man of straw. I look in vain for any genuine resistance. Of course, the gold bug is literature. Of course, any other story of mystery and puzzle is also literature, provided it is as good as the gold bug. Or I will say, since that standard has never since been quite attained, provided it is a half or a tenth as good. It is goldsmith's work. It is Chinese carving. It is Dedalian. It is fine. It is the product of the ingenuity lobe of the human brain working and expatiating in freedom. It is art. Not spiritual or transcendental art, but solid art, to be felt and experienced. You may examine it at your leisure, it will be always ready for you. You need not fast, or watch your arms overnight in order to understand it. Look at the nice setting of the mortises. Mark how the cover fits. How smooth is the working of that spring drawer. Observe that this bit of carving, which seemed mere ornament, is really a vital part of the mechanism. Note, moreover, how balanced and symmetrical the whole design is, with what economy and foresight every part is fashioned. It is not only an ingenious structure, it is a handsome bit of furniture, and will materially improve the looks of the empty chambers, or disorderly or ungainly chambers, that you carry under your crown. Or if it happen that these apartments are noble in decoration and proportions, then this captivating little object will find a suitable place in some spare nook or other, and will rest or entertain eyes too long focused on the severely sublime and beautiful. I need not, however, rely upon abstract argument to support my contention. Many of the best writers of all time have used their skill in the inverted form of storytelling, as a glance at our table of contents will show, and many of their tales depend for their effect as much on character and atmosphere as on the play and complication of events. The statement that a good detective or riddle story is good in art is supported by the fact that the supply of really good ones is relatively small, while the number of writers who would write good ones if they could, and who have tried and failed to write them, is past computation. And one reason probably is that such stories, for their success, must depend primarily upon structure, a sound and perfect plot, which is one of the rare things in our contemporary fiction. Our writers get hold of an incident, or a sentiment, or a character, or a moral principle, or a hit of technical knowledge, or a splotch of local color, or even of a new version of dialect, and they will do something in 2 to 10,000 words out of that, and call it a short story. Magazines may be found to print it, for there are all manner of magazines, but nothing of that sort will serve for a riddle story. You cannot make a riddle story by beginning it, and then trusting to luck to bring it to an end. You must know all about the end and the middle before thinking, even, of the beginning. The beginning of a riddle story, unlike those of other stories, and of other enterprises, is not half the battle. It is next to being quite unimportant, and, moreover, it is always easy. The unexplained corpse lies weltering in its gore in the first paragraph. The inexplicable cipher presents its enigma at the turning of the opening page. The writer who is secure in the knowledge that he has got a good thing coming, and has arranged the manner and details of its coming, cannot go far wrong with his exordium. He wants to get into action at once, and that is his best assurance that he will do it in the right way. But oh, what a labor and sweat it is, what a planning and trimming, what a remodeling, curtailing, interlining, what despair succeeded by new lights, what heroic expedients tried at the last moment and dismissed the moment after, what waste paper baskets full of futilities, and what gallant commencements all over again. Did the reader know, or remotely suspect, what terrific struggles the writer of a really good detective story had sustained, he would regard the final product with a new wonder and respect, and read it all over once more to find out how the troubles occurred. But he will search in vain. There are no signs of them left. No, not so much as a scar. The tale moves along as smoothly and inevitably as oiled machinery. Obviously, it could not have been arranged otherwise than it is, and the wise reader is convinced that he could have done the thing himself without half trying. At that, the weary writer smiles a bitter smile, but it is one of the spurns that patient merit of the unworthy takes. Nobody, except him who has tried it, will ever know how hard it is to write a really good detective story. The man or woman who can do it can also write a good play according to modern ideas of plays, and possesses force of character, individuality, and mental ability. He or she must combine the intuition of the artist with the talent of the master mechanic, but will seldom be a poet, and will generally care more for things and events than for fellow creatures. For, although the story is often concerned with righting some wrong, or avenging some murder, yet it must be confessed that the author commonly succeeds better in the measure of his ruthlessness in devising crimes and... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.